The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
It's between the lines for Jota. It's not been dealt with by the defence. And here's Sadio Mane. Is this the moment for him? It is. Forward by Rudiger again. Here's Conte. And a chance here for Christian Pulisic. Oh, what a save!
Okay, very happy new year to each and every one of you that spent time with the Red Agenda, and here's hoping that 2022 is a prosperous one for yourselves and the Reds, of course. Started with one hell of a fixture at Stamford Bridge, but game management is becoming something of a concern. I'm Steve Hothersall, and on the pod with me, James Pearce, and football writer Stephen Beacom, and it was sensational stuff at Stamford Bridge. Liverpool looked in firm control at 2-0, James, but there was plenty of twists and turns, and it did feel like a couple of points dropped again at the very end.
Yeah, I think Virgil van Dijk probably summed it up best when he was speaking to the TV cameras after, when he said, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea drew, but Manchester City were the real winners. It certainly felt like that, because I think going into it, you kind of felt it was a big game in terms of trying to close that gap to City, who, you know, are just absolutely relentless at the moment, aren't they? And so I think it was a real mix of emotions coming away from Stamford Bridge, because on the one hand, you have to factor in the circumstances, and I could understand why Pep Linders was upbeat and defiant, because, you know, far from ideal preparations, you know, with Jurgen Klopp watching at home, having got COVID, you know, 9 senior players missing due to a mix of COVID injuries, obviously Andy Robertson completing his ban. So you have to factor that in. But the other side of it is that, you know, Chelsea also had problems of their own. And Liverpool, again, were in a position to go on and win the game, and they let it slip. And it was just very, very open, wasn't it? And, you know, you mentioned game management there, and it does feel like that has been a theme of this season. Certainly the biggest contrast for me between this Liverpool team and the one that won the title 2 years ago, because back then Liverpool was so adept at getting into commanding positions and shutting games down, and they certainly don't have that ability this time around, for, you know, a whole host of reasons that I'm sure we'll go into, you know, not least the amount of chopping and changing that's gone on in that midfield department. So yeah, I think it'd be wrong to be overly critical, you know, since Wem was a point away at Chelsea, something to be kind of fuming about. You know, I think that says a lot about how crazy the standard is now at the very top end of the table. But it was still a performance you could pick plenty of holes in.
Yeah, absolutely amazing advert for the game. You couldn't take your eyes off it. The tempo was exceptional, wasn't it? Stephen, sort of result, and going back to what James just said then, the sort of result that would feel absolutely fine if other results hadn't let Liverpool down this season.
100%. Going to Chelsea is one of the toughest assignments in world football, and going to a Chelsea side that were playing at that level made it all the harder. I've got to be honest, I think that's the best Chelsea have played all season. I would go as far to say it's probably their best performance since they won the European Cup final last season, and it was a different performance because they were all guns blazing. I think what happened with Lukaku and his interview, and obviously the fallout with that, with Thomas Tuchel and him being dropped from the squad, gave them impetus, it gave them extra motivation, it gave them desire. And Liverpool had to cope with that, as well as all the issues that they had going into the game. And for Liverpool to come out with a 2-2 draw was perfectly acceptable in terms of just if you look at the result on its own. But when you're 2-0 up, away at one of your biggest rivals, I do believe you've got to see it out. And therein lies the problem. Liverpool are not seeing games out at this stage. And with Manchester City setting just an incredible standard this season, it's not good enough, effectively, to draw 2-2 away to Chelsea, even though on the face of it, it's a decent result. City have now won 11 games on the bounce. They're so far ahead right now of Liverpool and Chelsea that you can hardly see them. And it's going to take an almighty turnaround for Liverpool to win this title. And that was the aim at the start of the season, to go and win the championship for a 20th time. City are setting the standards, and unfortunately at this point in time, Liverpool aren't living with those standards. And we have to get back into a situation where Liverpool are seeing games like this out and winning these games. and hope then that City falter down the line. That's the only way that this turns into a proper title race.
So a couple of seasons ago, and we'll go back to that point you were making, James, a couple of seasons ago, Liverpool had it down to a fine art, didn't they? That ability to see games out, that they understood it. You would have expected them to sort of draw on that this season. So why is it that they've struggled to control things in some fixtures that have completely baffled us? So Brighton at home, maybe even Leicester away when they got the penalty. Not so much that Chelsea game, because I'll go back and say again, I think a point's decent, but why have they struggled in those other ones?
Yeah, I just think it comes down to the balance of the team. They seem to have it down to an absolute fine art 2 years ago in that title challenging season where, you know, they were, I think teams almost felt that once they were behind against Liverpool, they weren't going to be given a sniff. And I just think that that kind of air of invincibility as well and truly, you know, well and truly not there this season, because teams are being given a sniff. Too open, you know, not compact enough. I thought Chelsea with Kante and Kovacic, you know, they were much more the dynamic, you know, presence in midfield. Liverpool lost too many battles. There were too many holes. Just too easy to play through. And then I thought in possession, that midfield three didn't really work well as a unit. And it is a theme. You know, it wasn't just a one-off. You think back to Brentford, you know, what was that, 2-1? 3-2 up, didn't get the job done. You mentioned Brighton there, obviously 2-0 up, only got a point. Even City, you know, there's no disgrace drawing at home to City, but Liverpool led that game going into the last 10 minutes. You know, you had the Spurs game, you know, recently where they were in front. What was that, it going into the last 15, 20, didn't win. And now Chelsea. You know, there has been a lot of injuries in that midfield department. I think, you know, that he must have used 9, 10, maybe even 11 different combinations in there. That doesn't help, you know, the lack of continuity. I think you have to factor in the absence of Gini Wijnaldum. And not so much the absence of Wijnaldum, but also the decision not to directly replace him last summer. Because, you know, yeah, I understand that Liverpool had this idea to transform Harvey Elliott from a wide attacker into a central midfielder. And, you know, let's not forget, that actually worked pretty well in the opening weeks of the season. Elliott was fantastic, but then, of course, he suffers that horrendous injury and is out for 4 months since. So there was a lot of, obviously, debate yesterday over why was James Milner starting, you know, ahead of Keita, ahead of Oxlade-Chamberlain. Well, we know that Klopp and Pep Linders makes these decisions based on what they've seen on the training field, what they, you know, what is required tactically for that particular battle. And if they thought that either Keita or Oxlade-Chamberlain could have given them what they needed in that game, then they would have started ahead of Milner. So I thought James Milner came in for some unfair criticism because, you know, people pounce on the fact that, you know, why is he still starting games when, you know, he turns 36 on Tuesday? But, you know, he's still starting games because he has the trust of the manager and the coaches to carry out the game plan. And I didn't think he was really the problem. I thought, you know, but for some of the tackles and interceptions that he made protecting the back line, Liverpool would have been exposed more often in that first half. And then he, you know, he certainly tired second half, which wasn't a great surprise in a game of that intensity. So yeah, that's a big thing for me, you know, that midfield department, trying to get the balance right, because certainly that is an area of vulnerability.
There's some really good articles on The Athletic, not least James's piece looking at the game, but also Mark Carey's statistical analysis. He said, in terms of the midfield, it was the lowest pass completion ratio this season of 73% in the first half, Stephen. Chelsea dominated that important area.
They did, and Kante is just a dynamo, isn't he? Like, he's like a terrier let off the leash. He's all over the pitch. And when you're playing someone like that, your midfield has to be in top gear. And sadly, as James pointed out there, they weren't. And Kovacic, he came to the party as well. But Kante ran the show, simple as that. Henderson couldn't get near him. To be honest, Fabinho, who I'm a huge, huge fan of, didn't have one of his better games. And out of the three midfielders, I thought Milner was probably the pick of the bunch. It's going to be a problem, though, going forward, this, because who is the best midfield? Like, Henderson has dipped in form. There's no two ways about that. Much as I love Jordan Henderson and he's an exceptional leader, the last few games he hasn't been at his best. Obviously, Milner is getting older, but he's still as fit as a fiddle, you know, so he's going to play games. Jurgen Klopp, as James has said, has trust in him. I think Thiago has been a big miss. because Thiago was showing real class, real top form, and then obviously he is out for a period of time, and I would love to see him come back as soon as possible. I also think it's worth pointing out that Liverpool are the great entertainers. I said it earlier on in one of the podcasts that they're the most entertaining team on the planet. And I do believe that whenever Liverpool come to town, it becomes an event for other teams. I've thought this for a while this season. When Manchester City come to visit a stadium, it's almost a fait accompli that these teams are beaten before they go out. A bit like what Liverpool were whenever we won the title. But now you've got teams like Chelsea, Tottenham, even Leicester, who think, do you know what? Let's go to toe-to-toe. The fans get up for it. The atmosphere in the stadium whenever Liverpool are in town is off the charts. Like, if you heard Stamford Bridge as loud as that for many a long year, boy, were their fans up for it. And I think then that feeds into the players as well. And Liverpool have got to cope with that. But the thing is, champions do cope with that. And right now, Liverpool don't look like they're going to win the league title. For all the magic that Mo Salah has provided this season, and he has been without question the player of the season and is the best player on the planet, at the moment Liverpool are looking like a second place team. And I don't know how we address that, because while we can maybe sort out our own problems, Manchester City don't look as if they're going to have many problems going forward. We're in an era where you've got a Manchester City team who are just playing unbelievable stuff in terms of getting results. I would say the most efficient team possibly in Premier League history, and that is tough to beat. But Liverpool have to get to that level of efficiency as well as producing all this incredible entertaining football. They're the best watch in the world, but there is a little part of me sometimes think I'd love to see us win 1-0 in the dullest game in history, just to get that win under our belts away from home, and then we start all over again. For instance, the Wolves match, that was one of the most enjoyable ones of the season, when it wasn't the most thrilling of encounters, but we got there in the end, and that's what Liverpool need to start doing.
I'd go along with that idea of Liverpool being the great entertainers. James, before you joined us, myself and Stephen were having a chat before we started the pod, and Stephen said, I can't even remember anything special about Manchester City this season. He said, it's not like they're a team that get me off my seat. But actually, they are the team that managed to get the results. And Graham Souness said on Sky yesterday, he sees them as the strongest group of players in English football that he's ever seen.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to argue with that assessment. And that's why, you know, on the one hand, it feels too defeatist to be talking about a title race being over at the start of January, especially in a climate like the current one where, you know, teams are, you know, as Klopp has described it, as like a lottery with the daily testing for COVID. You never know who you're going to lose day to day. But you're right, with the depth that City have got, you know, they're going to have some major, major issues, you know, in terms of COVID and injuries for it to seriously affect them. You only have to look at their bench in games recently compared to, say, Liverpool or even Chelsea with the problems that Tuchel's got at the moment. So, yeah, they're on a different level. And I think he's right in terms of just the brand of football that City play. They almost kind of just slowly just wear teams down, don't they? They don't, quite often don't play without a recognised centre-forward. They're just, you know, they dominate the ball. It quite often it is attack against defence. You know, ironically enough, you know, Arsenal actually caused them more problems than I've seen anyone cause them for a while, really. But, you know, again, it wasn't enough to take any points off them. Whilst you contrast that to Liverpool, and, you know, I was sat there watching that first half at Stamford Bridge. You know, it was like watching basketball, the way it was end to end. And you're right, fantastic for the neutrals, but not particularly great in the context of trying to win league titles, because you need to have greater control. I mean, you look at, you know, I think Pep Linder's quote was, you know, it's never boring with us, which is right, but it's not a huge compliment at the minute. You know, I think the last five games in all comps, you're looking at 10 goals scored, 9 conceded. That has to be addressed. And the big thing for me is, you know, this month now, without Salah, without Mane, and of course Keita as well, you know, I just don't think it's realistic that you're going to have the firepower there to blow teams away like Liverpool have done at times this season. You know, they're probably, you know, I don't think we're going to see Liverpool scoring threes and fours. So that they're going to have to be more compact. They're going to have to be more resilient. And they're going to have to grind results out if you know, they're still going to be competing for three other trophies, you know, come when those boys return from Cameroon, because that's the challenge now. Forget the Premier League title. I just don't even think it's worth really even focusing on that now with the gap to City. You know, there's, you know, Liverpool have got a two-legged semi against Arsenal with the prize of a Wembley final at stake. That is huge. They also, you know, go and have a proper run in the FA Cup this season. And you've got a fantastic Champions League knockout tie to look forward to over the next month or two as well. So there's so much still to salvage from this season. It's just, you know, I think at the moment it's unrealistic to think that that will include the Premier League title.
Right, let's go to a few points in the game. So within seconds, there's controversy. Mane leads with the forearm, not the elbow, not sent off. But what's your thoughts on this, Stephen? Was it a red or not? Did he get away with one straight away?
I have to say, I think Sadio Mane was fortunate not to see red. In the modern game, I know it was stated on television coverage that it may have been a yellow purely because it was so early in the match, but I don't really buy all that. You know, a red card is a red card, whether it's in the first 10 seconds or the last 10 seconds. Aspilicueta, he didn't hold back, did he, in his post-match interview?
No.
He it was clear that it was a red. And I just thought Sadio was fortunate. I think at times, though, Sadio Mane sometimes just has to look at another player and pick up a booking. I do think over the course of this season and maybe even last season that referees have been too card happy with him over the past 18 months. But I do think he got away with one. And Liverpool fans were delighted he got away with one, given that I thought he performed pretty well over the course of the match. He scored a fantastic goal, capitalising on a bad error in the Chelsea defence. And he caused problems for most of the game. And now he's away. Obviously, Mo Salah's away too. He's going to be a big, big miss because I have a funny feeling Mane's going to light up the African nations. I really do. And I think his team Senegal, if Mane can play as he does, they've got a real chance of winning that tournament.
Salah down the line, the ball by Alexander-Arnold. Salah, oh, what a finish! How does he do it? It's another world-class finish by Mohamed Salah.
I don't know how many pods we've sort of bathed in the beauty of Mo Salah moments. Here's another one. Mad to think that some people still don't recognise him as the world's greatest player, James. Here he is again with a moment of sheer genius. Tricks everyone, squeezes the ball in at the near post, makes it look so easy. Yet again, a goal cutting in from the right-hand side. The guy is just out of this world.
Yeah, just another piece of absolute awe-inspiring brilliance for what is a pretty bulging collection already this season for Mo Salah. The technique and the execution of the goal is just on an absolute another level, isn't it? It was interesting because where the press box is at Stamford Bridge, you're sat just behind the away dugout, and when Trent Alexander-Arnold got that ball, Pep Linders was screaming at him to pick out Salah, and you know, the quality of the pass from Trent, you know, couldn't have been any better. But the first touch, and then to shape like he did, Alonso obviously thought he was going to dart inside, but went down the outside, and then, you know, even Mendy, I think, was convinced he was going for the far side, and just to dink it inside his near post like he did, you know, to kind of outfox someone who's, you know, is an absolutely elite level goalkeeper. So it was just a shame that, you know, it didn't mean more in the overall outcome of the game, because you know, I think, you know, obviously every time Chelsea come up against Salah, there must be that nagging feeling of, oh my God, you know, how did this guy possibly slip from our grasp? Because, you know, he barely got given a chance, did he, by Mourinho when he was down there. And the fact that that he was offloaded like he was, you know, what, initially on loan to Fiorentina and then to Roma, you know, has to be one of the worst pieces of business in Premier League history, probably along with them letting Kevin De Bruyne go as well. So yeah, I mean that moment as well, when he in the second half, when he spotted Mendy off his line and clipped the ball beyond him from, what, 25, 30 yards. I mean, what a winning goal that would have been. It was, you know, credit to Mendy for being able to backtrack and claw it behind. But, yeah, Liverpool are going to massively miss Salah, aren't they? You know, he's in a way, fortunate that there's only two Premier League games in this period, and you'd like to think, you know, that Brentford at home and Palace away, you know, you should be able to win without him. But the void is big, because there's no one that gets close to Mo Salah in world football at the minute, let alone in the Liverpool squad in terms of deputies. And I did have a chuckle the other day when I saw that Mo Salah had not made Garth Crooks's Premier League Team of the Year for 2021. And I think Garth does like to be controversial, just to maybe to get the clicks, maybe to get people talking about his lineup. But I don't think you'll see a more laughable decision than that for probably over the course of the season, because since August there hasn't been anyone better in world football, let alone the Premier League.
Garth, what are you watching? Unbelievable. Do you want a word, Stephen, on that goal? I would imagine, like, Chelsea, like most other teams, do their homework. The keeper, Mendy, thinks, well, he's seen the wonder goal he scored against Watford and the one against Man City, so he's thinking he's just going to cut it far post, isn't he? But Salah's outthought him already.
It was beautiful. It really was. Salah's first touch should be put up in an art gallery somewhere. What he is doing with football right now, it's incredible. Like, James made a brilliant point a few weeks ago. I've always thought that Kenny Dalglish and Steven Gerrard are going to be just the two greatest Liverpool Football Club players of all time. But Salah really could be in the mix when he leaves Liverpool, hopefully not for a while yet. Because what he is producing now is different level football. That goal against Chelsea yesterday, it was one of those stand up and applaud moments. The ball from Trent Alexander-Arnold was perfect, just ideal for what Salah is thinking, what he's going to do. But then he faces up Alonso, and it's one of those now you see me, now you don't moments. And he blitzed past the defender, and then he makes a fool out of the goalkeeper, because the goalkeeper's thinking, I can't score in there, and he does. And you could see Chelsea fans actually behind the goal looking bemused, bewildered and stunned by what had happened, because they couldn't believe what had just happened. And it was one of those moments, and there have been many from Mo Salah this season, where you just have to say, what a magnificent footballer and what a finish. The guy is playing football off the charts, and it is a joy to see him in a Liverpool shirt. And let's hope that the contract gets sorted, because we need Mo Salah, and we need Mo Salah firing as he is. I can't remember the last time, apart from maybe Stevie G, where I've watched and admired and enjoyed a Liverpool player so much. And it must be a treat for season ticket holders and people who are going on the away trips to see him week in, week out. And long may the king reign.
James, you put on your piece that people can read on The Athletic right now, that obviously without Mane and Salah, Liverpool will have to perhaps win games in a different way, because when the two of them are in the side, you just blow teams away. So what is it that Liverpool need to focus on this month, which would be a different way of determining outcomes?
I think it is that shape and solidity. That's going to be the big thing, where this season you've almost, because of the form that Salah's been in especially, and then you throw into the mix, obviously, Jota and Mane's goals earlier on in the season before he suffered that, what was it, a two-month drought. You kind of felt, well, it didn't matter if Liverpool conceded one, maybe even two, because they had the ability to still win matches. I don't think that's going to be the case over the course of this month. I think they are going to have to grind out results, because you think, you know, you look at it at the minute, and, you know, Minamino and Origi, you know, they've both been out with knocks recently. The options up top are very limited. You know, you're placing a big responsibility on the shoulders of Jota and on Firmino. You know, of course, you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain who can play in the front line as well. So I think that's the big thing for me. They need to address those problems, especially when they're out of possession, because, you know, when you play with such a high defensive line, you are just asking for trouble when there's not enough pressure on the ball, when there are such gaps for teams to play the ball through and play the... And Chelsea got in behind Liverpool far too easily. And yes, in the coming month, Liverpool aren't going to face a team as good as Chelsea. You know, they've still got, you know, a two-legged semi-final, you know, a lower league team coming to Anfield who'll be desperate to impress. So yeah, that's the big thing for me. You've got to tighten up. You can't be giving teams the kind of chances that they're giving away at the minute. You know, the other thing I'd say on Sunday was you know, I felt for Quiveen Kelleher because I thought he was really, really impressive deputising for Alisson. Not easy when you're thrown in at the deep end in such a big day like that. He was certainly not even, you know, remotely a weak link. I thought he dealt with everything that came his way really well, and there was, you know, that one brilliant reflex save from Pulisic in the second half, having made a really good brave stop at his feet in the first half. So certainly no worries about him going into the first leg of that semi against Arsenal.
I thought both keepers were excellent. In fact, you know, Mendy was superb as well, wasn't he? I think some of the saves of the season in the second half from both of them. I thought on Pep Linders, I'm a massive Pep Linders fan. I think he's great. There's a little bit, Stephen, of the craziness of Klopp about Pep Linders, isn't there? James can give his thoughts because he was probably right next to him in the press box. But did you enjoy Pep almost auditioning there?
I love Pep Linders. I think he's a brilliant foil for Jurgen Klopp. He certainly calls it how he sees it. Clearly Klopp has a lot of admiration for him too, to have him as his assistant. And had no problem, obviously, with Pep taking the team yesterday. In an ideal world, you want Jurgen Klopp there because he's such an inspirational and influential figure. And for players to see him on the touchline, it'll drive them on. But Pep Linders, you know, obviously the players have loads of respect for him. So I think he's fantastic. He speaks very, very well. You can tell that he's got Liverpool in his heart and in his soul. And that's all you want. And plus, he's very, very good at his job. I would actually compare it to how I feel when Gallagher now starts for Liverpool instead of Alisson. At the start, anytime Alisson was out, I was as nervous as a newborn kitten. But now, whenever Gallagher plays, I'm as calm as the Fonz or Top Cat, because I just think this guy's got it. He's cool in between the sticks. He can clearly play football, and he can save as well. And he's a commanding goalkeeper. And I really do believe Liverpool are in very, very safe hands, not just with Alisson, but with the Cork Leviathan. I'm very, very happy with Gallagher. I'm very, very happy with Linders. I think what Klopp has done is not only has he built a brilliant staff there, but he's bringing in young players who are capable of doing the job. And I thought coming out of Stamford Bridge that Gallagher was one of the shining lights. And seriously, going forward, I have no problem with him playing. Obviously, you want Alisson back in because he's one of the best goalkeepers on the planet. But Gallagher, what a brilliant understudy to have.
Absolutely. A thought on Pep, James. Was he receiving any instructions, guidance from Jurgen? Was that maybe a half-time phone call? Or was it all on Pep from the word go?
No, Pep did say after that he'd been in regular contact with Jurgen, and Jurgen was giving his feedback. I know Jurgen did speak to the players remotely at half-time, but you know, in terms of all the preparation and stuff, and you know, the team selection, that was all done mutually beforehand anyway. And in terms of the in-game stuff, there was, you know, Klopp certainly trusts Pep Linders implicitly, and I think you could see he really enjoyed, you know, not perfect circumstances, obviously, and he'd have preferred Jurgen to have been there, but I think he really embraced the situation that he'd been put in. Again, watching him, he was so animated on the touchline, whether, you know, it was, you know, constantly barking orders, calling players across, trying to get bits of information over, you know, deep in conversation with Peter Krawitz and Vital Matos, you know, trying to make little tactical tweaks here and there. And in the second half, I think, you know, talking about earlier where the issues were in midfield, you could see he looked quite anxious at times when Chelsea were on the ball and attacking. You know, at times he had his hands on his knees. You know, if almost looked like at times he wished he could run out there and move players into the positions he really needed them to be in to try and plug some of those holes. So yeah, I think, you know, when we talked a few weeks ago, didn't we, about, you know, Pep and clearly his aspirations to be a manager one day. I think ideally for him that would be at Liverpool. If he doesn't get the job after Klopp, then I think we'll see him manage a top club elsewhere, because he is an absolutely elite level coach. And when you see him deal with, you know, the media like he did yesterday and everything else around it, I've got no doubt that he will go on and be a fantastic manager one day. And I he's still so young, isn't he? But you know, he's already got this wealth of experience, certainly in terms of tactically and commanding the respect of players. You know, he ticks those boxes, and Yeah, I think the big thing for Klopp is he knows that that this team is in safe hands whilst the manager carries out this isolation period back home in Formby.
James, it was the first match in England to trial safe standing. Did it add in any way something to the atmosphere? There's a few clubs that are going to take part in this. The findings are going to be assessed and then possibly more clubs next season. Did it feel any different? Did it add something yesterday?
Yeah, I think it did. I think it did add something to the atmosphere. I think it has to be a positive thing going forward. I think obviously there's this, you know, it's being trialed out, isn't it? But it's, I welcome it. I remember back to the days when I used to go and stand at football matches regularly, and I think it does help the atmosphere. And I think, you know, lots and lots of people want to have that option. And, you know, with the way that the technology is now, with the safe standing that they've produced, I think it's safe. Yeah, I welcome it. I think it's a positive step forward.
Stephen, I don't know whether you saw, I just want to quickly mention the series which started on ITV last night. Kevin Sampson's written this. Obviously, it's about Anne Williams and her fight for justice. Slightly ironic, really, that was on television the same day this safe standing trial started. I don't know whether you saw Anne on television, but an incredible and important story being told at the moment, and everyone should really take time out to watch this.
Yeah, I would concur, Steve. It's an emotional watch, but a very, very important watch. Anne Williams is one of the most inspirational women that there's ever been on this earth. Her fight for truth and justice is a story that should be told, just as it is for all of the other Hillsborough campaigners. So yeah, I would certainly echo those thoughts. My best wishes to Anne Williams' family, because what a woman she was, an inspiration to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely heartbreaking and very tough to watch, but so important. Of course, that's a four-part series. Right, so it rolls on to cup games now. You mentioned it a few more times, James. We'll just give a quick thought on the week that lies ahead. So Arsenal in the League Cup semi-final first leg. And there's a lot of emphasis on this now, particularly after the way the quarterfinals played itself out. This one feels quite important.
Yeah, definitely. I think, being honest, of course, you know, when you embark on the season in August, you know, the Carabao Cup is the fourth in terms of the list of priorities. But I think, like anything, once you negotiate those first opening few rounds and Wembley is now so close, it does become important. And I think you only have to look at Man City in recent years. Pep Guardiola does not turn his nose up at the chance to win trophies like this, and nor should Liverpool, because, you know, we saw from them winning the Champions League what that did for them in terms of the following season. You know, I think success does breed success. Supporters want big days out. They want trips to major finals. And, you know, if Liverpool get through to Wembley, no one's going to be thinking, oh, it's only the Carabao Cup. You know, it'll be an occasion to really cherish. And I think it'll be a real mix in terms of, you know, there will be, you know, some opportunities for squad players who have been short of minutes, and some young players who have done fantastically well for Liverpool in the competition so far. But I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's Liverpool did unbelievably well to dig that tie out of the fire against Leicester in the last round, and now you want to see them kick on and make the most of that, because coming back like they did against Leicester only really means something if you go on and get your hands on that trophy. So yeah, I think, you know, interesting the fact that they've recalled Leighton Clarkson from Blackburn from his loan spell. You know, that obviously gives them another body over the course of January. I think I'm looking forward to seeing more of Curtis Jones. I think, you know, he's obviously had a very stop-start season so far. You know, he had that kind of freak eye injury that kept him out for quite a while, but it was good to see him back out there late on at Stamford Bridge. And I'm sure here we'll see him, you know, against Arsenal and probably Shrewsbury as well. And, you know, someone like Joe Gomez really needs game time as well to get his season up and running again. You know, of course, Andy Robertson available now after his suspension. He'll be absolutely chomping at the bit. So, looking forward to it. Another trip down to London and all about ensuring that, you know, they set it up nicely for that second leg where they'll have home advantage.
James's second home at the moment, the capital. Thank you very much indeed, guys. Absolutely terrific. First pod of 2022. Hope you've enjoyed it. And the Red Agenda, of course, comes to you twice weekly, so we'll catch you at the back end of the week. Thank you to Stephen. Thank you to James. And we'll see you next time on the Red Agenda.